Welcome to Divan im Gespräch, the video podcast of Der Divan, the Arabic cultural house here in Berlin. My name is Darius Hoffman, and before I introduce you to our guest today, just a quick note that this video, as always, for this video, you can activate English, German, or Arabic subtitles in the YouTube settings, so you'll be able to watch this video in any language you would like. And our guest today is the scholar of modern and contemporary Islamic thought, Islam in Europe, and Moroccan thought, Dr. Mohamed Hashas. It's a pleasure. We are delighted to have you here as our guest.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
Yes, thank you. And today we are speaking on the occasion of the Divan Forum for Contemporary Arab Philosophy, where you've also been invited and hold a speech as a speaker at this event. Dr. Hashas holds a PhD in political theory and has held academic positions and research fellowships at institutions such as Louis University in Rome, the Leibniz Zentrum Moderner Orient in Berlin, Oxford, Copenhagen, and others. Dr. Hashas is an author and editor of several influential books, including The Idea of European Islam and Contemporary Moroccan Thought on Philosophy, Theology, Society and Culture, a book which he presented here at the Divan, actually, last year. And his research mainly focuses on contemporary Arab Islamic intellectual history, political theology, Islamic thought in Europe, and Moroccan philosophy. Yeah, Dr. Hashas, I'd like to start with a quote which I found on your website, and it says, knowledge, in capital letters, is something that will not give part of itself to you until you give your all to it, and when you give your all to it, then you stand a chance. Still, you cannot be sure that it will give you even that part. So that's a quote by Ibrahim al-Nazam, an Islamic philosopher who lived in the 9th century. What is it about this quote? Like, why did you choose this one, and what's the meaning behind it?
Yes, thank you for starting with that. It simply means that whatever we know is never enough. Mm-hmm. And the more we dig deep, the more we find that we ignore a lot and we still have to go deeper. Mm-hmm. So that's a quote.
Okay. So as already mentioned, you presented your book, Contemporary Moroccan Thought on Philosophy, Theology, Society and Culture, here at the Divan. And could you give us a brief summary about what contemporary Moroccan thought is and how Moroccan schools of thought are positioned within the whole Arab philosophy and philosophy in general?
A big question, but let's try to answer it this way. Contemporary Moroccan Thought, as a book, tries to introduce some major trends that have developed in Morocco during the last 70 years, from the 50s, more or less, in the major fields of philosophy, theology, and social sciences and humanities, including cultural studies, international relations, mm-hmm. gender studies, and minority studies. And it tries to deal with this broad question, mm-hmm. simple but broad at the same time, how do Moroccans think? Mm-hmm. And it is in that sense an answer to how the Arabs in general, or the Arab Muslims in broader sense, think, or people in North Africa, including the minority, the linguistic minorities. Mm-hmm. But I'm taking Arab Islamic here as a major label within which other labels could be used. And how they treat the major issues that concern human affairs, mm-hmm. from existential questions on being, existence, to more concrete issues about the state. Mm-hmm. How should the state be? What should the state system look like? What does it mean in modern terms, in contemporary terms, in pre- and post-colonial times? What is the meaning of constitutionalism? What is the meaning of democracy? What is the meaning of identity again? which is the place of minorities, national identity, how to protect it, how to be open, how to, you know, these are, which are questions that all other societies also raise.
Mm.
But there was a void on North African intellectual history in modern times. There has been a focus on the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
But even in the Middle East, there isn't much intellectual history in modern times, you know. Yeah. So this book, which is a big one, volume, the first of its kind, actually, in 30 chapters, nearly 830 full pages, try to, yes, cover this lacuna in academia as a way of writing intellectual history of the region. And we have taken, and they've taken Morocco because it's context or a country that I know, and they've I've been educated through its major intellectuals when I've been growing as a high school kid and then at the university. And then, so it's a passion turned into an academic interest, scientific interest.
Mm-hmm. But it's, so it's specifically about Morocco, not North African thought, in like it could be Algerian, Tunisian.
Exactly. Instance. So the idea, hopefully, that the few other scholars from other regions should produce something like that, similar, so as to contribute to the debate, so that people outside the North Africa, outside the Arab world, can know what the people of the region think about these various issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a way of intercultural dialogue at the same time, because this, the issues they deal with, they are issues that other societies, either in the past or now, have dealt with.
Yeah.
So it is a way of sharing intellectual history of this spot of his, of the Arab world with the rest of with the rest of the world, including with the English speaking world in general, including the Europeans, and especially that a number of Moroccan thinkers studied in Europe, returned. Few of them might still be residing, doing literature, for example, residing between the north and south of the Mediterranean, so they are navigating. So it tries to also situate Moroccan thought, intellectual scene, in relationship with the Middle East, and again, modernity or the modern intellectuals of especially Europe and in certain extent North Americans, and the contributors, most of them are non-Moroccans. So.
Okay.
Which means that Moroccan thought is read outside, is followed by scholars from different departments in different countries. That's also an idea behind the book, to see how much ideas travel from inside to outside. Of course, also the ideas that are discussed inside the country have traveled to the country as crossroads, etc. So, yeah, that's in general.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, really interesting. This, a lot of the things you mentioned raised in me the question, how important is identity for your research? Because you mentioned different authors, scholars from different, with different nationalities, like different countries, regions, cultures.
Yeah.
So how important is identity in this special regard?
Good question. Another good question. It depends on what we mean by identity. Do we mean the scientific identity, intellectual identity that scholars tries to trace to see what are the major books that have influenced Moroccan thinking for the last at least like 13, 14 centuries since the Moroccans have started to use Arabic as the language of their intellectual history? Or, and also later on in modern times with the inclusion of French and a little bit Spanish, maybe, especially French. So a number of intellectuals sometimes write, but Arabic is the major language in this case. Or do we mean identity, the national identity of how do people and the masses in general, how the political elite and the politics try to introduce Moroccanness, of Tamgrabit in Moroccan,
and to exclude other people,
And exclude or not include how to define it, how to navigate the question of identity. It's always intricate, but Morocco is by its history diverse seeing its geography. But at the same time, at certain moments, certain ideas become like the major ideas that drive the history of the country. And these now in modern times are, they were, but now also they are debated, especially in global context or age, and especially now also with social media. And then you have some about 5 million Moroccans outside Morocco.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a little Morocco outside Morocco. Yeah. And they go back every year or every half year or whatever, and from different languages. So there is a lot of socio-cultural dynamics in the country also. But the work in terms of identity, to go back to the idea of history of ideas, what is mostly debated is intellectual identity of the country. It's pre-modern ones, so it's mostly Arab-Islamic. And it is diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And even when we say Arab-Islamic, it's diverse. And then for the last at least 100 years of contact with the modern world, with France, Spain, and as colonial powers, or later on as historical part of the fabric mm-hmm. of linguistics of Morocco, more or less, if we can say so. So how do to navigate identity, the intellectual identity? How do Moroccans want to think of Morocco as horizon?
Mm-hmm.
Is it mostly Arab Islamic? Where is the place of the local language that is now constitutionally recognized, that has been there before Arabic? Mm-hmm. Which is, I mean, it's called Berber in European languages, mm-hmm. but it's Tamazight as the official language.
Yeah.
Which now there is literature and it is taught at schools and there is more productions in it also. It remains very minor, but that's also another identity marker that is constitutionally added to the identity of the country. And how to situate Moroccan thought in relationship with European thought, in communication with it, in also refutation of it,
mm-hmm.
the way Europeans have written about Morocco, its history during colonial times.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of critique of the way Europeans, for example. So that is kind mm-hmm. of Moroccans appropriating, writing their own history
mm-hmm.
after a certain period of absence. And then how the Moroccans situate themselves in the global scene.
Mm-hmm.
As citizens of this world,
mm-hmm.
so they are in touch with the Latin world, Latin America, for example, the Asian Far East. So you find Moroccan intellectuals in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was politically difficult time, and it's called the Years of Lead, but at the same time, there was a lot of magazines
mm-hmm.
Being published in the country. And in this, there are contributors from different intellectuals from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So you find this intellectual dynamics in which the Moroccans try to be open to intellectual dynamics worldwide.
Yeah,
it's especially to the idea of a third world or, the world of tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
I can just imagine that it's a bit difficult to summarize all Moroccans under this one term, Moroccans, because you mentioned the Amazigh and probably lots of other cultural groups. So as far as I understand now, there isn't one voice when it comes to their wishes or desires for the future, for the present. So I think that's one important aspect when you talk about identity, right?
Yes. Absolutely. So there is the idea of plurality underlined by the intellectuals of the country.
Mm.
They recognize this plurality of ethnicities historically,
mm-hmm.
Arabs and the Amazigh, and linguistically, which has become cultural the diversity in different ways. And a push to give this plurality more officialization, to protect it more through institutions and not to be just there and maybe vulnerable. So, there is the identity of being very close to the Mediterranean, to the Far East, to the Middle East, and then to Sub-Saharan Africa.
Mm-hmm.
The geographically is rooted south in that part of the world historically, and historically, traveled through North Africa, through Morocco to Sub-Saharan Africa, and then or through to the Middle East, also at certain moments through Al-Andalus. So historically, there is a lot of connections.
Mm-hmm.
There's always been there. At certain moments, it could, for various reasons, stop or end. But then there is kind of that revival. And then there is Morocco as a horizon, as some think of it, through the Atlantic. So the Atlantic mm-hmm. gives it a different mm-hmm. spirit,
yeah.
different horizon, larger, mm-hmm. To view the world, yeah. to have aspirations that are wider and expansive with yeah. A. I mean, it's large.
No border.
No border, yeah. exactly. So the vision is should be as plural as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As an aspiration, of yeah. course. At the end, societies, they like to have traditions.
Yeah.
Societies, by definition, however open they are, they remain at some moment traditional, even when they are open or try to be open. So... but the fact that there is spirit or there are intellectuals that defend that idea of being open mm-hmm. To the world to be influenced by that geography, to be on the edge. I borrow the word the edge,
mm-hmm.
taraf in Arabic, the edge of North Africa, you know, mm-hmm. the edge of the Arab world. You know, yeah. it's far from the center of the Arab world, but yeah. geographically...
The far west,
which yeah. literally, yeah. Maghrib in Arabic, yeah. literally it means the far west of yeah. the Arab world, you know.
Yeah.
So this also plays on the psyche of the intellectuals mm. of the country, you know, and the poets, people of literature and also philosophy, like Abdul Kabir Khatibi, is now so well read. He died in 2009. But he wrote in the 80s, maybe in 81 or 82, a book about a major famous essay in French, translated and etc., about plural Maghreb, mm-hmm. plural Morocco in particular, and in which there was this spirit of Morocco as a horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's used also as a title among various writers, as a horizon of thinking, as a horizon of... whatever, you know, in politics or in culture, in poetics, in different forms. So it's taken as a rhetorical or as a figurative image, if you mm-hmm. like, to be on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
But
a very positive, yes, ambitious one,
yes,
right?
Yes, 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 okay. Very positively, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Moroccans, besides the intellectuals, the masses, they are proud of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You see it in the colors of the country, of the people, the different cultural difference between north and south. Of course, there is all the time most things are shared, but then you have each region also has its characteristics. And that's what also intellectuals try to catch, you know,
mm-hmm.
As anthropologists or historians.
Yeah.
That diversity that has to be protected and championed mm-hmm. in a world that is dynamic, repeatedly or gradually in metamorphosis and communication, and also in an age when there is fear of going back to populist
mm-hmm.
Nationalisms in the negative sense.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Mm-hmm.
If I can.
Yeah, very interesting. Maybe already to get to our last point, because it was a long day today, so I try to keep it short. A few minutes ago, you mentioned the cultural exchange between Morocco and the so-called Western world or Europe, especially regarding colonialism. It's mostly a dark history, probably, yeah. but... how do you see it nowadays? What is this cultural exchange looking like? Does it even exist, or could it be strengthened further? So how does Moroccan let's say, Moroccan-European cultural exchange look like today?
Yes. Colonialism, of course, is a dark thing in human history. There is no doubt about it. But at the same time, with human beings, with time, they try to overcome that and think of what comes after it in terms of historical dynamics, including, for example, here language, French, which some Moroccans, not some but few, I would say, to be more precise, but still write in French, write novels, and some of them get major awards in of the Francophonie. Mm-hmm. Let alone the ones that are raised in France. So that has also for many is considered a plus in the country. It has turned from language of, yes, colonial experience, but at the same time, the locals have appropriated it to communicate with the world besides Arabic. And at the end, it's the French of the locals, the French of the Moroccans, or the French of the Algerians, of Tunisians, etc., which means that it reflects the histories of the country, the dynamics, the aspirations, also moments of dark periods in politics. And the same thing could be said about other aspects. I mean, intellectual exchanges, the reintroduction of philosophy in post-colonial times in the modern university in Rabat, and in the beginning it was in French, but soon it was Arabized. But Moroccans have remained using French in their major contact with philosophy, with German philosophy. Recently, there are scholars who know the language, but in the beginnings, they were reading German philosophy, for example, or British American philosophy through French. Mm-hmm. Okay. But then, with time, scholars have tried to read it in direct languages in which these major texts were written. So I don't know if I have tried to answer you. And the same thing applies to other aspects of life.
I think this is a very ambivalent topic in general, because some people, I can imagine, would argue there are still so many neo-colonialist structures, even represented by Moroccans speaking French.
Absolutely. That's why there is still a debate sometimes. So how should we... be considered the North Africans in general who write in French? Of course, it's not about doubting the national identity, belonging, but how far is it important to write to the masses? If one is writing to the masses, and the masses know Arabic, and the masses should read these or enjoy these texts in Arabic. But at the same time, language is liberty. Some have got it as through their parents, and they have adopted it, and they didn't have the means to maybe add Arabic to it. I mean, those who use French, and they try to engage with the public through dialect, Arabic. So they try to pass what they write in French through seminars, through public debate in Moroccan Arabic, which is Arabic. But the question remains, yes. It has to do with identity. How far, how many languages could a language bear, nation-state bear? You know, it's a challenging question to every identity question in consolidated democracies and non-consolidated democracies. So it's about the efforts that societies should have, should spend. How many languages should a Moroccan know? Why should they have three languages instead of only one, for example, or two, etc.? So
these identity questions, I think, are always, sometimes, in my opinion, impossible to solve, because then you could always argue, Arabic was also a colonial language like hundreds of years ago. So it's sometimes a little bit... with too much morality in it, this debate kind of, but nevertheless, very interesting debate. Maybe my last question now would be, what's there for Westerners in general to learn from Moroccan philosophy? Because I can imagine most people in Germany, for example, just don't know much about Moroccan philosophy in general.
Good. Thank you for that question, too. First, Moroccan question, every philosophy is written in certain language.
Mm.
And Moroccan philosophy is written in Arabic. Mm. Most of it is in Arabic.
You write in English, right?
Yes, but I am studying these texts. I'm not, you know, so there are, but the Moroccan major intellectuals, they write in Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes an intellectual writes 99% of their production in Arabic and one or two texts maybe in French at certain moments. But in general, it's Arabic. So it is Moroccan philosophy or intellectual production in that sense is Arab.
Mm-hmm.
So an Arab here is not an ethnicity, it's linguistic, cultural. Yeah. What could be learned? It could be learned that there is agency of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And that human aspirations could be similar, and that often they are similar.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And that, and what I mean by that is that this can lead to the development of human solidarity mm-hmm. at all levels, you know, societal, normal, ordinary life, but on intellectual. That mm-hmm. what the Germans faced or face in terms of either existential questions, that are philosophical questions or political questions. Moroccans are doing the same. The Algerians, the Tunisians, the Egyptians do the same. But with difference, which is in details
mm-hmm.
and rhythms. Because of other various factors, the questions could be posed in different moments of history with different flavors.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, I think there are so many similarities than differences. But again, those differences are important at the end mm-hmm. in human societies. And they have to be recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And that recognition means once we arrive to that point, it means that there is the idea of multiculturalism is reinforced.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only thought about, but then not maybe touched or concretized through examples. When we read intellectual histories of geographies outside where we belong, we come to recognize, and recognition is an important aspect in enforcing real pluralism, genuine pluralism in the world and in relations and human relations, I think.
All right. Thank you very much, Mohammed Hassas.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.